the near side. Taken by Landeskog through the corner. He goes front shot. Score! Kale McCarr, a backdoor play. And is he red hot or what? Two goals last time out against Seattle. He rips one home tonight against the Sens. And the Habs get it right back. They've got a 2-1 lead.
Yeah, Kale McCarr is real good. The secret is out. Has been for a while. Ditto Nazem Kadri. The conversation historically around Kadri has been more about suspensions than skill, but skill very much on display for Kadri this season. Peter Baugh joins me now, who covers the Avalanche for The Athletic. Peter, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure is mine, and it must be a treat watching slash covering this Avalanche team right now. Winners of five in a row, doing it all without Nathan MacKinnon. Kadri, Nichushkin, Burakovsky going off on a nightly basis. And, you know, Kadri's an interesting name in Canada, certainly in Toronto, where he had a controversial time. In Calgary, we all know that he, you know, turned down a trade that would have seen him become a Calgary Flame before going to the Colorado Avalanche. How would you describe, like right now he's on fire, but how would you describe his time as a member of the Avalanche?
Well, I think it's been largely productive and largely a positive, except for one giant blemish, I guess you could say, and it came at a tough time, which was his suspension in the playoffs last year. And I know he's kind of talked about how I think Jared Bednar, the coach of the Avs, has said, like, he knows that there were points during Kadri's Maple Leafs tenure where he lost his cool and did stuff, and he viewed the play that happened in the playoffs last year as kind of a different situation where he was trying to make a good defensive play and just kind of landed the hit wrong. But the fact of the matter is he had kind of that reputation with him, and that led the Department of Player Safety to come down really hard on him. And it might have cost the Avalanche the series against Vegas. Who knows if that series would have been different if Kadri is in there. He's the type of player they probably could have needed in that series. But yeah, he's largely been, I mean, pretty disciplined. I mean, he takes penalties, obviously, but he's been pretty disciplined with Colorado for the most part and has been a productive player. He was awesome in the playoffs 2 years ago, and now he's off to the best start of any season in his career with a 9-game point streak going on right now and 23 points in 15 games.
Yeah, he's been, you know, about the suspensions and the aggressive play, I remember Peter DeBoer telling me once when he coached the Kitchener Rangers when he made the deal for Steve Downey coming in from Peterborough. I was like, wow, this is, you know, you guys are a Memorial Cup team. You know, what are you bringing in Steve Downey? Wild, reckless, penalties, danger, all of it. And he said, you know, stop. Like, just stop talking. He goes, you have to understand one thing. As a coach, you know, I would rather have to tame a tiger than paint stripes on a kitty cat. So as much as, you know, coaches will look at someone like Kadri, or players might look at Kadri, or fans might look at Kadri and say, wow, he's wild. I mean, isn't part of that, like, I know this is going to sound stupid, but welcome to me. I understand that the suspensions aren't good, and the suspensions come at very bad times for Nazem Kadri, but you're Jared Bednar, or you're, you know, Mike Babcock previous. Like, there's something really seductive about having someone that you need to calm down as opposed to pump up. Like, you've never had to pump up Nazem Kadri for a game, have you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it does help to have a guy that is can play physical, can play with an edge. Obviously, I don't think there's anything, like you said, it's not like there's anything good that comes out of a suspension, and you never, obviously, hits up high and hits to the head are scary and dangerous, and we don't want those. But I do think that there is definitely an appeal with the edge that Nazem Kadri plays with, his ability to both play make, but also, like, he's not gonna be afraid of anything or anyone on the ice. I think his, like, I want to say his first NHL fight was with Victor Hedman, who's 6'6", and Nazem Kadri is not 6'6". So he's not gonna back down, and that certainly is an attractive element to have as a player. And it's part of what has made him, it's been both, like you said, it's kind of been both what has made him such a good player in this league and also what has kind of contributed to some of his lower moments in the league.
when he was with Toronto, I'll tell you, Peter, there was one player specifically that every time they hooked up, you can be guaranteed that they were going to throw down. And that's whenever Toronto would play Buffalo, Nazem Kadri would always go at Rasmus Ristolainen. The big, huge defense, like honestly, Peter, like yeah. nonstop would go at this guy. So it can't just all be Kadri. I mean, Nathan MacKinnon goes out. Like, we've seen this before from teams that are loaded with superstars, as Colorado is. Your key guy goes out, and everybody takes it up a notch. Kadri is, you know, Exhibit A for the Avs right now without MacKinnon. But who else has been that guy for Jared Bednar?
Yeah, well, I mean, Cale Makar has any early season struggles he was having, or he was a little off, it seemed, the first few games. Any of those concerns are out the window. He's elevated his game. He's looked awesome. And then you look at a guy like Valeri Nichushkin, Andrei Burakovsky. That whole line has been really good lately, producing a lot of points, being sound offensively. And then there's kind of some of those depth guys like Logan O'Connor's given the team a lot of a bit of a spark this year, and kind
he's
of a middle
man.
Six role. And he's a good
really
player.
Good.
That's like, he's really good. And the Avs signed him before this season to a 3-year extension for about $1 million a year. And they've got him on a great contract for the next few years. And he's a guy who can play middle six minutes, and he's filling in on the top line right now. He's a good player. And then I think also the schedule lightening up a little bit has helped this team. I mean, they've played a Vancouver team that's been struggling mightily, and they've played the Sharks who haven't been playing great of late. They played who'd they play the other night? Oh, Ottawa, who's coming off the COVID pause. And so it's kind of been a lighter schedule than maybe that first month when they started 4-4, but we're playing Tampa and Florida and all those teams.
The goaltending and Philip Grubauer leaves, you know, that was over, I think it ended up being like $500,000 difference between what Colorado was offering and maybe more term and what he ended up settling with Seattle. But he ends up with the Kraken. Darcy Kemper's the guy. He's on the expiring contract. When Kemper's on, like we've seen it before, when Kemper's on, you know, some of those seasons in Arizona, he looks like one of the best goaltenders in the NHL. How confident is Joe Sakic in this tandem, Kemper and Jonas Johansson as well?
Yeah, well, and I think Pavel Francouz is the other guy to monitor. He's hurt right now, but he's nearing a return. And 2 years ago, he was a really, really good 1B goalie to Philip Grubauer, is probably the 1A. And if he's healthy, I think that you look at Darcy Kemper and Pavel Francouz as a tandem that can win you a lot of games. I think Kemper's been up and down a bit this year. I think he started a little slow, but he really picked it up. And then he did not have his best game the other night. He let in, I think, 5 goals to Ottawa, but there were a lot of weird things that happened in that game. His skate blade fell off at one point. He got looked like he got stuck falling down at one point, and that led to a goal. So like those games are going to happen where you're just not going to have your A game. And fortunately for the Avs, they're playing a team that couldn't stop them defensively, and they were able to come away with a 7-5 win. But I think overall Kemper's been pretty good in the last, if you take away the first few games where maybe there's a bit of an adjustment period, he's been pretty good. And I mean, I think with this Avalanche team, I think it's entirely possible that they just need a goalie to be pretty good and not cost them games, because obviously it's a really talented team offensively with an incredible defensive core that when they're kind of going at their best, really suppresses shots and makes it so that the goalie's not facing a ton of difficult looks.
Tonight they'll face off against the Anaheim Ducks. They have Dallas on the horizon, Nashville, Toronto, Montreal as well. At what point are we expecting to see Nathan MacKinnon back?
So the goal is he's not going to be back this week, but the goal is that they go on a road trip to it's Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Philly, and New York. And the goal is for him, that's like the first week, 9 days or so of December. And the goal is to have him back on that trip at some point. So, I mean, I think it helps the team to know that like they're playing well right now. They don't have to rush getting him back. There is the little bit of like set stretch where they weren't doing too well in the standings. Now they're kind of upright where they should be with the talent they have. And I think that they don't need to rush to have him back, but I think the goal is first week of December.
Now, you have a really interesting piece on The Athletic right now about the future of the Colorado Avalanche. And one thing we've known about the Avs is they have drafted exceptionally well, developed exceptionally well, but a lot of those players are on the team right now. They've done a great job keeping that pipeline full. And you've got a piece right now that talks about the next ones, whether it's Justin Barron, whether it's, you know, Shane Bowers, whether it's Sampo Ranta, someone that I get to see a ton. Just I live about, you know, 45 minutes, you know, an hour away from Barrie. So I get to watch Oscar Olsson, and he is flat out fantastic. Like, that guy's going to be a real good player for a long time. What's next for the Avs, in your estimation?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting phase, right? Because they had this period, especially going into last year, where they kind of had all this cap flexibility and they could maybe make moves for a Devon Taves and a Brandon Saad. And now you're seeing they don't have that same flexibility. They can't pay they can't take on large cap hits, because now Cale Makar is making $9 million. You have Gabriel Landeskog got his bump. Nathan McKinnon's coming at his contract. They're going to have to probably double pretty soon. So I think that there's an emphasis right now, or at least the way I see it, is the farm or the like prospect pipeline is really what's going to determine how long this window of contention stays open for this team, because you might not be able to keep all of the kind of free agent guys like the Burkowskis, the Kadris, the Nichushkins. Like, some of those guys you might not be able to keep. But if Alex Newhook, who's currently up with the big club right now, keeps playing well and continues to develop the way they think he could, that could be a second line center for you. And then you've got like Justin Barron and Drew Helleson. And if some of those guys can emerge as good players, you kind of have the top of your defense set with Makar and Byram, if he's healthy, Gerard and Taves for the next couple of years. Like, you don't need you don't need superstars. You need guys who can fill in and play those middle of the lineup roles. And I think that the Avalanche, how those prospects develop, will determine kind of how long this contention window stays open.
Do you have a sense of where the Avs are at with an extension for Kadri, if indeed that is in the offing?
So I haven't checked in the super recent weeks. I know they hadn't, going into the season, they hadn't kind of addressed extensions with any of their pending free agents, which is an interesting tactic by Sakic. I remember I asked him right before the season started in a press conference about if they've started talks, and he said no. And they've got their whole second line, Nichushkin, Kadri, Burkowski, they're all free agents. I think third pair of Jack Johnson, Ryan Murray are both free agents, and both their goaltenders Francouz and Kemper are free agents. So I think that it definitely seems like the front office is kind of taking a wait and see approach of letting watching how these players perform, and then they'll evaluate as the season goes. And if they decide not to extend them before free agency, then they'll have some flexibility with what they want to do come this offseason. And it's an interesting strategy. I know I would be a terrible GM, because I'd be so stressed just waiting and having all these balls in the air. But, I mean, Joe Sakic is very patient, and he's proven to be pretty good at this general managing thing. And he's, so I think they're comfortable with where things are at right now.
Final one for you. I always think that it's unfair to say, well, the expectation is they win a Stanley Cup, because winning a Stanley Cup is hard. But I think safe to say, you know, you can say our expectation is they get there to the cup final. Like, once you get there, anything can happen. You got 7 games, you got frozen water, you got a rubber puck, you got injuries, it's so many things, right? So I think it's unfair to say, well, we expect a Stanley Cup this year. That is the expectation. I think getting there, though, I think is a fair expectation. Is that the expectation for Colorado this season again?
Well, it's certainly the goal. And I mean, I think if you look at the Western Conference, you look at the teams that have a chance, it's Colorado, it's Vegas, it's Edmonton. And I think that it's helpful for Colorado that potentially they won't have to play Edmonton or Vegas until the third round if the playoffs line up, which would help them a lot, because I think that every team in the Avalanche's division, they're good teams. Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuck's obviously very capable of getting hot, and you have St. Louis, who has a really good forward group. But Colorado is the most talented team in that division, and the way the playoffs set up, unless Vegas or Colorado or Edmonton is a wild card team, they won't have to face Edmonton or Vegas until the third round.
This has been great. Peter, thanks so much for stopping by, sharing your expertise and insight into the Avalanche. They'll face off against the Anaheim Ducks this evening. And as always, Colorado very much a team to watch. Thanks so much for this, Peter. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Take care.
There is Peter Baugh, who covers the Avalanche for The Athletic. They will take on the Ducks, one of 14 games on the board this evening. It's a very busy night around the NHL. Coming up in hour two, Billy Jaffe is going to stop by, our friend from Nesson. We'll talk about the Boston Bruins. They'll face off tonight against the Buffalo Sabres. And anyone in my vintage remembers how great a rivalry that used to be. Like when these two teams, this is like mid-70s, were in the height of their powers. You know, old Adams Division matchup. Buffalo Sabres are going to the Stanley Cup Final against the Philadelphia Flyers. The Boston Bruins are going to the Stanley Cup Final against the Philadelphia, like, or going to semifinals against the Philadelphia Flyers. This is was a really great rivalry. The Buffalo Sabres and the Boston Bruins. So whenever they mix, I always get that, you know, I'm watching, you know, Gilbert Perreault and Rick Middleton and Brad Park. I always sort of Jerry Cheevers, Donnie Edwards and Danny Gare, French Connection feelings about that era. As a matter of fact, this was such a great rivalry going back to where the Buffalo Sabres entered the NHL in the 1970 expansion along with the Vancouver Canucks. This was such a great rivalry that the first time these two teams got together to make a trade, I know many are going to say Peter McNabb, but that was a free agent signing and then compensation. The first time they got together to make a trade was Danny Pyé. That was the first time these two teams actually did business with one another. It is different now, but still, when the Bruins and Sabres get on the ice, at least from my little corner, there's always something there. Bruins are fifth in the Atlantic. Sabres have played better this season, although they're having some goaltending issues right now. Billy Jaffe from Nesson gets us caught up on where the Bruins are at, and Eric Erlandson from LightningInsider.com. Braden Point injury? Okay, that's cool. We'll still shout out the Philadelphia Flyers and roll along another NHL season. Jaffe, Erlandson, all still to come, teeing up some of the 14 games around the NHL this evening in the next hour. Thanks for listening to Hour 1. Hour 2 is on the horizon. More of the Merrick Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network in moments.
Brusk is there in support. Smith, the high slot. Forbert, Strand scores! Derek Forbert has become a scoring machine. Quite unexpectedly, the Bruins lead 3-2.
Jack Edwards with the call as we kick off hour two here of the program. Eric Erlandson, bottom of the hour, talking with Tampa Bay Lightning, rolling the Flyers 4-0 last night. Meanwhile, it's the Boston Bruins and the Buffalo Sabres this evening, featuring the goal-scoring machine of Derek Forbort this evening, paired with Charlie McAvoy. Our good buddy Billy Jaffe joins us from Nesson. How are you, Billy?
What's up, Jeffrey?
How's the podcast coming?
It's coming good. It's coming well. It's been a labor of love, and now we've partnered with Nesson, my friend, and
yep,
getting more recognition there. And so, yeah, Morning Brew, BRU, with Jaffe and Razor, Andrew Raycroft. It's going good. I mean, it's going great. Bruins fans appreciate it. A lot of, you know, 30 minutes of hardcore Bruins talk and trying to give them what they want. I don't know how I am as a host, not like you as an expert, but, you know,
please.
I just go there and, you know,
look,
shoot the you-know-what, buddy.
It's not that tough. That was, this is, we'll be right back. There's the three phrases. It's all you need, Billy. There's the secret. Anybody can do this. It's not that tough if I can get away with it. Listen, Morning Brew is an excellent podcast, and Billy Jaffe with Razor, our man, who was on the program about a couple of weeks ago. Andrew Raycroft is an excellent offering. So what would you say the main... Like, if you stuck the thermometer in Bruins fans right now on your podcast, what would be the number one thing they want to hear you and Razor talk about?
Well, I think they want us to talk about a winning, you know, a team that winning like they used to, you know, Bruins hockey. Not even, you know, big bad Bruins hockey, but Bruins hockey from 2 years ago, a year ago, you know, where they would really take it to teams, good depth. They don't have that right now. They're still winning, but, you know, they're inconsistent. They've got some shortcomings, some question marks. I think it's, you know, perhaps the best way to say it, some areas that need some addressing too. I think the fans are so used to this team, Jeff, being so regularly at the top that the fact that they're kind of middle-ish or middling right now, and part of the reason, and let's face facts, is they haven't played a lot of games. Tonight starts a stretch where we get a much better vibe on this team, a much better take on this team, where they're going to play six games between tonight and next Saturday, and six good games. So I think that they want us to talk about a team that I think has less question marks and more certainty, like some other Bruins teams in the past. But when you lose two guys in particular, like Krejci and Rask, that's creating gaps on any team that you are, Bud. Those are two bona fide big-time players.
They are, and it's impossible to remove two players like that from the lineup and not have an impact on the squad. And,
right.
And to your point, like tonight is game 16 for the Boston Bruins. You know, teams are, you know, a lot of them are right around the 20 mark right now. We look at U.S. Thanksgiving, or as you call it, Billy, Thanksgiving, and say, now we know what the trends are. Now we have a good look underneath the hood. We know what this team is, and we know what to do with it. But over 16 games, like what are, if you could isolate, I want to get into the Rask stuff here in a couple of seconds. So if we can park that for a minute, if you could, cause you're there, you watch every minute of every game. What are some of the trends that you've seen so far with this year's edition of the Boston Bruins that when we watch, like say we're watching the Bruins Sabres site, what should we look for? What are some of the trends here with this team?
Well, the good trends would be still the Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak line, even though they did not perform well the other night against Calgary. Unfortunately, they will have some off nights, and they did. But when that line is going, they're going. They still continue to be a very special, one of the top all-around lines, if not the best in the National Hockey League. Charlie McAvoy, that trend is continuing to rise. And, you know, ironically enough, just like the Bergeron line, he wasn't great the other night, but he's been on, I'd say, 98% of the time. He has been incredibly physical. He has been incredibly instrumental in making plays at both ends of the ice that you say, wow, and you love having him on your team. Some trends that aren't as perhaps positive is that, you know, the depth scoring, and while it did get better for the last couple before Calgary, still has been intermittent. And I'm talking more about the top, the middle six, Jeff, the former Krejci line, which is now the Charlie Coyle line with Hall and for now Nick Foligno on the right, and then the Erik Haula line with Jake DeBrusque on the left and a recently reinserted Craig Smith on the right, who had been injured for about 10 day or a week or so. You know, they need to step it up. They need line drivers. You know, they need guys to bring them along. And, you know, Hall, I'm wondering if Hall and Coyle is the best pair. You know, Coyle's been pretty good this year, but they both like to have the puck on their stick. And meanwhile, I'd love to see Taylor Hall drive the line. So, you know, Hall played really well with David Krejci, and it's been intermittent with Charlie Coyle. But those would be a trend. That would be a trend that the middle six needs to get better. And then the defensive crew as well.
Let me go back to McAvoy here for a couple of seconds. Let me go back to that Philadelphia game. Was that Charlie McAvoy in that game against Joel Farabee, or was that a Gord Kluzak, if I can use a name from the past that Bruins fans will remember? Nice little scrap with Farabee there. I mean, we've seen McAvoy throw down before, but that was a nice little exchange.
It was very nice. He hadn't done it, though, for almost 2 years to the day. And, yes, we have seen it before. He's not afraid. It's funny. That was BU. That was a terrier. That was a dog pound, literally. That's what that was. It was two terriers going at it, and neither of them I hadn't thought about that one thought. Neither of them had, you know, like there was contact right before they were jostling before the face off. And then there was contact, and then there was significant contact along the wall. And
cross
McAvoy's
checks,
like, you know, screw
checks,
this.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And he's like, let's get going. And Farabee didn't hesitate either. Now, they didn't play together at BU. However, is there, you know, knowledge of each other, friendship or lack thereof? I don't have that insight. And that's one of the things, I don't want to get on a tangent here, but that's what I miss about being able to hang with the guys in the locker room, so to speak, you know, sit down and find out the intricacies of those things. I miss that so much, Jeff, for our job.
Because, listen, you know, I'll tell you what, Ian McIntyre was on the Fan 590 yesterday, and he was talking about that vis-a-vis Elias Pettersson. And Zoom calls are Zoom calls, and you throw in the question and you get a generic answer back. But what's really missing here, even with someone like Pettersson, is sitting down and saying, like, well, how is the wrist really? Like, what is going on here? You get a much better sense of what these players are going through and how they're really feeling when you can actually, when you have the nerve to talk to them, as opposed to just doing it on an anonymous Zoom call.
Yeah. And, you know, and I, being around a team locally all the time, you develop relationships, you may have cell phones, et cetera, but there's also an understanding of when to ask and when not certain thing. And you also don't want to overdo it too. I mean, look, we all have our ins, right? We all have our guys that we turn to. But something like this, which I don't call little but not that big, you know, say, hey, did you ever skate with him over the summer? Or did you ever have anything? Or did you, you know, you guys just – he might have said, well, no, it was just spontaneous. And it sure seemed like it, too, that they went after it good. But that was Charlie McAvoy kind of saying, I'm a complete all-around defenseman, Jeff. You know, and he is – the comparisons were made years ago to Drew Doughty, and I don't think they're far off. I don't. We saw Drew Doughty get feisty with guys before and stick them and do this and that. And Charlie McAvoy, look, unfortunately, here's the good news. He's arguably the Bruins' most physical defenseman. Here's the bad news. He's arguably the most physical Bruins defenseman. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
This is you love it, but you don't always need to see it, so to speak.
You know what, one of the, going back to that point about, you know, talking to players and figuring out, like, okay, where does this one come from? I can recall, God, maybe this is like, geez, Billy, 2010, and there was an Islanders-Colorado game. I think it was the first Saturday night of the season, and Chris Stewart and Zenon Konopka dropped their gloves at the opening faceoff. And you're like, where the heck does that come from?
Right.
And then, you know, you talk to the guys and it's like, oh, that comes from the Brampton tournament in the summer. We had unfinished business and we settled it in the NHL,
right.
Like opening night.
Yeah.
You don't find out stuff like that unless you can talk to the players. Hey, let me ask you about Tuukka Rask. I've wondered about this question. I've asked people this question. Most recently asked Elliot here this question, and maybe you'll have a more insightful answer than anybody else, being as close to it as you are. Is it Boston or bust this season for Tuukka Rask if he decides to come back?
I want to say I think so because I, you know, believe Tuukka and how he loves Boston, and this is the only place he wants to play and isn't looking to go anywhere else. However, I've been in the game long enough to know that if a really good team came along to a really good player with a really good opportunity, are you getting where I'm going on this?
Are you going to Edmonton with this one, Billy? Is that where you're heading?
No, I would say it would have to be in a really nice city. I don't know. I don't think Edmonton. What happens? I'm being hypothetical here. Very hypothetical. All kidding aside. Yeah. What happens if the Florida goaltending doesn't go well? Well, Billy Zito knows Tuukka Rask real well. I'm just connecting the dots, you know. And Sean Thornton is a dear friend of Tuukka Rask. I have no knowledge of any conversation like this. I'm just saying, I've been in the league long enough to tell you, never say never, especially if a really good opportunity comes around. If I had the money to gamble on it, I'd say I don't see him going anywhere else. But I'm also not blind enough to say, well, holy smokes, if the Bruins for some reason doesn't work out, the opportunity doesn't work out, but yet there's a really good team out there that does, and he really wants to play. Why not? Especially if it's just for a couple of months, right? Mm-hmm. I don't see it happening salary cap wise. Let's just say before mid-January or even late January, and then you use the Olympic All-Star break, assuming the teams still go. That's a whole other conversation for another time. But you use that to get back in, and I don't know what that. I don't know how it works towards the salary cap or not. You know, I'm guessing that there might be amateur tryout agreements signed by Tuukka Rask to get playing again and skating with the team before being on the books, so to speak. Again, the whole salary cap thing has to come into play, that conversation. But it's a long-winded answer of saying I would like to think it's most likely Boston, but I don't know, man. There could be one or two teams that could pique his interest. Given the fact of, I still think he's a really good goalie. And I think, if there's an opportunity to win and it's not working with Boston, I wouldn't be blind enough to say it couldn't happen somewhere else.
Okay, so the tweet is, if I have it correct here, Billy Jaffe on the Merrick Show says, Tuukka Rask to sign with the Florida Panthers, send tweet. Got it. Great. I want to ask you about the old Adams division here in a second and Boston and the Buffalo Sabres, but what do you make of this year's edition of the Buffalo Sabres?
I think that they are a lot more structured, a little bit better in some areas. I think they have a right mindset with Donny Granato there. I'm a big Donny Granato fan. I think that they're struggling in net right now with what they have, and I think it's going to be a Buffalo team that will, I think they are what they are right now, Jeff. I do. Mm-hmm. I think they are what they are, but I think they have better structure, better leadership, guidance, and I think the players respect Donnie an awful lot.
So I was saying this a couple of moments ago on the program. Like, you and me are the same vintage, and we can remember, Boston challenging the Flyers. We can remember the Sabres challenging the Flyers, Stanley Cup on the line. That was such a great era, and these two teams, like, whenever they got together, it was fireworks, and there was skill, and there was toughness. It is, for me, one of the great, and the Rangers and the Bruins were this for a long time as well. To me, it's one of those sort of, and Montreal and Detroit used to have this, but by the time the 70s rolled around, it was gone. One of the great sort of, I don't want to say lost rivalries, because it seems like they haven't been good at the same time for long enough to make it a rivalry again. But essentially, this is a long-winded way, Billy, of me to say, I miss seeing the Sabres and Bruins in games where they're both great teams and there's something on the line. When you think of some of those old Sabres-Bruins games, what comes to your mind?
Well, one thing that comes to mind for me, and I agree with you, I remember even the mid-70s, the Roger Crozier type stuff. I was a little boy, but I still remember the pictures and when we read newspapers and the hockey news was your Bible, right?
Yeah.
I also remember the small rinks, both the Garden and the Odd were smaller. True. So especially as I started getting older and knowing more and more, these teams were built for those buildings. And so it's two dynamite sweaters. The colors are fantastic. And I've been preaching this forever, and I know you have been too, but for the love of the hockey gods, will you please bring white back for the home team? White jerseys, home team, awesome, let's do it. But anyways, these are both really proud franchises. Buffalo has been anything but good for too long now. It's time that they get straightened out in many ways. I think of battles, I think of the mid late 80s and Raymond Bork and our old buddy Brad May and Rob Ray in the 90s. And I think of that stuff and I think of battles. But again, I think before, and I know the new buildings came around, I'm going to say mid 90s and stuff. But I think a lot of those old battles and during the early part of the pandemic, the Nesson people started running an awful lot of those 1970s and 80s games, and they had some of those Buffalo games and the Hartford Whalers from the mall and everything. I mean, it was fun to watch. I hate the fact that we were watching them because of a world pandemic, but it was fun to watch, and it took my mind off all the other crap for about a half an hour.
So. You know what popped up on YouTube during pandemic, and I had forgotten that, you know, this was like, you know, Mike Gillis's debut in the NHL with the Boston Bruins. That Boston-Minnesota game where there was like, I don't know, like 550 penalty minutes or something like that. The game took forever to play, but there was like a million tiny little stories contained in it too. You can find it on YouTube. It's a fascinating one. And, you know, I'm with you. Like, it's a shame that, you know, because of the worldwide pandemic that we were forced to go down wormholes here to watch old hockey games. But that one's popped up if there's anyone listening that wants to go back into the history of the Boston Bruins. That was a wonderfully fun game.
It seems like Boston and the Stars, whether it was Minnesota, there was that game where Johnny Wensink, you know, challenged the whole North Stars bench years and years. I mean, we're going back to 70. Nobody wanted it, right? So it seems like the Bruins and the Stars, whether it's Minnesota or Dallas, you can go back to 2000 and, oh, smokes, is it 8 or 9? And the Bruins on an afternoon, a national TV game, and the Bruins and the Stars had 3 fights in the first 3 puck drops. It was Adam McQuaid, and it was Chris Bartsch, and it was wild. So it seems they have some good history as we get really off topic here. But
I remember that game. So that game was 2011. It was Super Bowl. Who was it that caught? I mean, it might have been Paille that caught Ray Swada with a high hit, ended up getting suspended. Andrew Ferentz blasted his teammate afterwards, which was controversial. But that was the year they ended up winning the Stanley Cup. And I think there was a Super Bowl party at Zdeno Chara's house that I remember asked Ferentz about it. And he said, no, we were all at Super Bowl party at, you know, Big Z's house afterwards. And there was no problem, you know, that, you know, Paille with the bad hit, whatever. But that was like the Bruins were, we all think of 2011, like, oh, the Bruins were rolling over everybody. They weren't. Like, that was a struggling team. But before that Dallas game, you're right, Billy. That Dallas game was huge for the Bruins.
There was another Dallas game. There was another Dallas game previously due to that, and I'm awful with numbers and remembering years and stuff. You're like a lockbox. I'm anything but. There was another one too where there were a bunch of scraps as well. So they seem to have these kind of almost unexpected violent games, angry games against whether the former Minnesota North Stars or the Dallas Stars at times, and it's fun. Because you never know what to expect, right? Especially in the regular season. Sometimes we get lulled into the, oh, this is just whatever, and then all of a sudden it happens. But getting back to Boston and Buffalo, I don't know if I see any of that kind of stuff happening tonight, given the makeup of these teams right now. But the Bruins could use a little effort. You know, the Bruins, boy, oh boy, they're 9-6 right now, and I still don't feel like I know what they are. And I'm going to give them through these next 6 games, as you know, because they started later in the season, but also, you know, the league started later. But the Bruins have had such a bumper car type of schedule, fits and starts, and sometimes it's taken a while for that car to rev up again. This next 6 game stretch is a big one. Now, there's also word, I don't know if you saw this, Linus Ullmark was supposed to start tonight, and he tweaked something at morning skate today, so he's a game time decision. So we'll have to wait and see if he starts or if they go back to Swayman. And anyways, it's always a little something. But this team, they need a little attention. They got some goodness to them, but they still need some attention, I think, if they're going to be what the fans want them to be.
He's Billy Jaffe. Check him out. His podcast, Morning Brew, is outstanding. And he's outstanding on Nesson and whenever he comes on this program as well. Billy, thanks, pal. And listen, happy Thanksgiving tomorrow. Enjoy it with the family.
Thank you very much, Jeff. And if you want to just have another, well, you're still the vegetarian, but if there's a fake turkey one, make it tomorrow too. And just, you know, sell it with your buddies down south, you know.
Have a
I love you, buddy. Good to talk to you.
A U.S. tofurkey from Billy Jaffe. Thanks, pal. There he is, Billy Jaffe from Nesson. And the Morning Brew podcast with Andrew Raycroft is a delightful offering and a must-listen to for Boston Bruins fans. We're going to get on the Tampa Bay Lightning page here with Eric Erlandson in a couple of moments. I want to remind you there's 14 games on the go around the NHL this evening. It is a very... very busy night for Canadian teams. The Vancouver Canucks facing off against the Pittsburgh Penguins. We all know the Vancouver story right now. That one, we're game to game, day by day, period to period. You can watch that one on Sportsnet Pacific. Tonight on Sportsnet 1 East and Ontario at 7 o'clock Eastern, you can watch the Montreal Canadiens facing off against the Washington Capitals. Sportsnet West has the Columbus Blue Jackets facing off against the Winnipeg Jets. Looking forward to that one. Also on Sportsnet Ontario, the Toronto Maple Leafs take on the Los Angeles Kings. On Sportsnet West at 10 Eastern, the Oilers take on the Arizona Coyotes. Don't look now, by the way. And we all know that Arizona's not done trading. There's still some players that are going to move as they strip this thing down before building it up again. But Arizona has points in their last four games. I'm not saying it's going to mean anything against Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and company. But the Oilers are coming off a loss last night against Dallas. It's back-to-back. The Coyotes have played better hockey of recent notes. You can watch this one on Sportsnet West. Also, want to mention... tonight, the Ottawa Senators taking on the San Jose Sharks. It looks like we're going to see, and some would say, finally, although others would say, hold on, keep him a winger and then transition him to center. It sounds like we're going to see Tim Stützle in the middle tonight for the Ottawa Senators. Things haven't gone well, as we all know, for the Ottawa Senators right now. Last place, etc. They'll face off against the San Jose Sharks. 10:30 Eastern starts. Ottawa 4-11-1. San Jose has played better than many have expected and or predicted, and I was one of them. 9-8-1 so far this season. Tomorrow we're going to do a lot of sort of where we're at a quarter of the way through the season here on the program. But San Jose is better than expected. They really are, and a lot of it too. When it comes to the San Jose Sharks, is improved play from, you know, someone that I think we've all been waiting for to establish himself as, and you know, the next big or one of the next big power forwards in the league. It's taken a while, and you can maybe say, hold on a second here, I want to see a full season of this first, and that's fine. But Timo Meier's been really good for this team, and he's playing with Logan Couture and Rudolph Balcers. There's another name that Ottawa Senators fans will know. He's been real good. 15 points in 13 games, physical brand of hockey as well. He's been good. So we'll see what happens tonight. Ottawa Senators facing off against the San Jose Sharks. Your chance, perhaps, to finally see Tim Stützle in his natural position of center. Meanwhile, the Tampa Bay Lightning, always a story with the defending Stanley Cup champions. As they're looking for a three-peat, as Steven Stamkos has mentioned in interviews like the one that Elliot and I did with them at the Chicago Players Tour, we don't care about the regular season, just get in, and that's what we do our damage. It seems as if, you know, Tampa, despite injuries, most recently to Braden Point, just keep rolling teams. And the Philadelphia Flyers, their latest victim, Eric Erlandson, joins me now. Longtime Tampa Bay Lightning observer and insider from lightninginsider.com. Eric, how are you today?
I'm good, Jeff. Thanks for having me back on.
Listen, pleasure is always mine. Let's start with the obvious, and that's Braden Point and the injury. The game against the Devils where Tampa just let New Jersey back into this one. Well, I'll tell you what. Let me know your thoughts on this. When I saw Point crashing into the boards on Saturday afternoon and come up favoring his shoulder, like the limb is like, it looks like just hanging off of him and he's not going to be able to do anything. To see him go to the dot for the penalty shot to me was stunning. To see him stay in the game doubled that. And, you know, no surprise we found out about an injury after. How did you see that entire sequence, and were you as shocked as many that he took the penalty shot?
He almost scored, Jeff. Can you imagine if he actually scored that goal and it would have tied the game? We'd be talking about legendary status. But, yeah, boy, when you saw him go into the boards, immediately just drop the stick, hunch over and favor in that shoulder, you're like, oh, that doesn't look good. You felt encouraged by the fact that he stayed in the game. But you know how it is. You get that adrenaline flowing through you, and it's almost like a natural painkiller at times. And even John Cooper after the game was saying, well, we got to wait to see how he feels tomorrow, because usually it is the next day. And to find out it's only 4 to 6 weeks based on what we saw, that's probably on the positive side of what is otherwise negative news, that he's only going to be gone 4 to 6 weeks, because you start fearing labrum and surgery, and now you're starting into the month recovery. So it's only 4 to 6 weeks for and no surgical procedure that we're aware of. That's in this case, that's a good scenario.
It is, and you know, he joins Nikita Kucherov. Listen, he's not the the only one, but the two of particular note for Tampa right now. But it seems as if the Tampa Bay Lightning just have that next man up mentality. Like, okay, Braden Point is out. We've got a Cirelli here. We've got a Stamkos that can play both center and wing. We're just fine. Thank you very much. Where do you think this injury, when you look at the lineup, where do you think this Braden Point injury is felt the most in their lineup right now?
Well, because they've been through this before with other injuries, including last year when they had Nikita Kucherov all regular season, they understand the mentality it takes to push through this. What I worry about and wonder about is, you can sustain those type of losses to top-end players for a short period of time, but eventually reality sets in. And without Kucherov until after Christmas, now without Point until after Christmas, you know, the depth on this team has always been its strength. It's a big reason why they won back-to-back championships. Well, half that depth went out of town. Yanni Gord's in Seattle, Blake Coleman's in Calgary, Barbara's in New York, Tyler Johnson's in Chicago. They don't have the depth they used to have. What they need to happen here is Russ Colton, who I always felt was going to be a key to this season. Where was he up in his next step of progression? He's a guy that's going to have to start contributing offensively. He's had a ton of chances. He's only got the one goal of this year. You know, the two kids, Taylor Radish and Boris Tkachuk, they had a fantastic game last night playing on a line with Ross Colton. They're going to need some production out of those guys to start moving forward. Neither of those two guys have a goal. So they're going to need to make up for this offensive production. You can't fill Braden Point skates. You can't fill Nikita Kucherov skates. But you have to do it collectively, and that's the mindset that they have. And Steven Stamkos even told me last night, you know, everybody has to pitch in here. Everybody has to be rowing in the same direction to get us through this and make sure they're still in a good spot when those two guys come back in particular.
So speaking of Stamkos, you know, we saw Tampa celebrating, partying with the cup. I live just a little bit north of Markham, Ontario. Stamkos, you know, brought the cup here for all the Markham Waxers players to check it out. He was a Waxer when he was playing minor hockey as well. I don't know. Did he go to Lourdes and bathe in holy water before the season? Like, what's the explanation here? 18 games, he's got 22 points. Like, what kind of deal with the devil did the 31-year-old make here?
Well, look, back when he broke his leg, we all thought he was Wolverine, right? So maybe he's got some of that Wolverine running through him, because he looks healthy. I mean, that's the biggest thing with him. He had a summer to have a full training, right? You think of the abdominal surgery he had, and then he came out in training camp and revealed to us that he had knee surgery in May, right before the playoffs started, and that's why he missed the last month of the regular season. So he had a full summer to get healthy, and you can see it in his skating. You know, it's such a big part of his game. It always has been, outside of that shot that he has. But he just looks like he's more fluid on the ice. He's getting around a lot better. He's getting to areas quicker. And I think that goes a long way to the production that he's had, because if you look at it, I think he's got eight power play goals, might be four. So it's less than half of his goal production as on the power play, where obviously he makes a living. They're coming 5-on-5, you know, and the goal he scored last night, 5-on-5 goal. That's a key thing with me. He's been kind of a power play specialist the last couple of years, but his 5-on-5 game is at a level we haven't seen in a number of years, and I think the biggest reason is the health factor.
You know, there probably wasn't a bigger smile around the NHL last night than the one on Corey Perry's face after finally finding the back of the net. As Perry, you know, reminded everybody just, you know, how elite a player he can be. That's a really great shot by Corey Perry last night. I know it's, you know, 18 games and he's only got the one goal and the 3 points, etc. We know it's, listen, Corey Perry, it's, you know, you wait for the playoffs and that's where this guy shines. But it seemed as if, you know, the weight of the world came off Corey Perry's back last night.
And he threw it about 20 rows into the stands. If you watched him on the way back to the bench there, you know, taking that metaphorical monkey off his back. He's had a ton of chances. I mean, the last I looked a couple of games ago, I think he actually led the team in individual high-danger chances created. So he's had a ton of opportunities in and around the net. So for that one to go in, first of all, we were all robbed the potential of a Pat Maroon penalty shot, which I think would have been fantastic because Corey Perry scored during that delayed call because I think that was going to be a penalty shot Maroon. But it was. I mean, it was just to watch that whole play develop, and you can see why he is still a player that can do damage. He identified going around the net. I mean, how do you lose Corey Perry? Well, Corey Perry got lost in that play because he came around the net. Stamkos faked the shot and got it back to him down low. And that's a goal scorer's goal, man. Coming to the bottom of the circle, finding a top far corner. He was obviously happy with the monkey off his back, but the team reaction. I mean, all six guys immediately went over to the glass there, and they were all just like this massive group hug. And that's how much he's already meant to this team. Kind of ironic if you think about it.
Yeah, Eric,
but he's
we're,
been so
Eric...
welcomed in there. Right? Yeah. Like, they just love the guy already. A couple of times, he's already worn a lot to him.
Hold on, Eric. We're just going to pot you down for a second here. I'm having problems with your cell phone. We'll buzz you back and try to get a better connection. But the point is well made about Corey Perry. A level of frustration there, certainly. But that is still, even at 36 years of age, like, that's still, you know, that's still a player that can make elite-level plays. One of the interesting things about Tampa to me, too, is, you know, that entire third line is completely gone. And right now, they kind of have a makeshift. You're not going to recreate what Tampa had with their third line, but Maroon, Belmar, and Perry is a pretty solid third line. Now, is it, you know, Barkley Goodrow and Blake Coleman and Yanni Gourde? No, but that was amongst the elites. Like, that harkens back to that Anaheim Ducks third line back in 2007 with, you know, Sammy Paulson and Rob Niedermeyer and Travis Moen. But Maroon, Belmar, and Corey Perry, you know, as a line to replace the exiting third line, which is probably the best third line in all of hockey, not too shabby. Sorry, Eric, we have you back now on a cleaner line. If you can finish your thought, that'd be great.
Yeah, I was just saying how much Corey Perry has already been introduced into this room, right? Which, you think about it, he's been on the other end of Tampa Bay's two titles the last 2 years, but he's been so welcomed in, and you saw the reaction from the team, just the group hug down in the corner, the reaction from the bench when he came back to celebrate it. He's already meant a lot to that team, so for him to get that goal, I think the players were probably actually happier from him than he was to get that off of, you know, to get that monkey off his back.
One other flashpoint play from last night. Was that Brian Leetch playing for Tampa, or was that Zach Bogosian? Because it was Bogosian's number, right? It was 24?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, first of all, the clapper, right? Like, the shot on the one-timer, his first goal in almost 2 years, which is hard to believe for a guy who shoots the puck the way that he can. And, you know, John Cooper even said it last night that he maybe get him shooting more. And you saw why last night. But the move he made, actually, on Stamkos' goal when Stamkos fed him, I mean, just dangling through the slot. I mean, who was that? Was that 4 or was that 24 on the back of his jersey? Because we haven't seen that out of Zach Bogosian, right? Like, we think of him as kind of a rugged, you know, more of a stay-home guy at this point of his career. But he showed that he's still got some of the, you know, some of that in his game. And if he can bring that, you know, you think of it, they lost David Savard. They don't have a lot of depth on the right-hand side, especially the last 2 weeks we've seen without Eric Chernak. You know, his contributions, if he can play as he has since he's come back from injury, that is a huge boost to this defensive core that is not quite as deep. It's pretty high-end, but it's not quite as deep as they are on the forward side.
When you look at this year's edition of the Tampa Bay Lightning, like, certainly, like, as you mentioned, like, the third line has, you know, all gone elsewhere. And this is a salary cap league, and we knew Tampa was going to take a step back, you know, but now we're all, you know, here at Thanksgiving in the United States, and we see trends, and we know what teams have under the hood. And yes, Tampa has their injuries and Kucherov's on the way back after Christmas, Braden Point, etc. But if you're Julien Brisebois here, how are you feeling about your team, and are you thinking anything for deadline, or are you saying to yourself, okay, we've had a look at these guys. We think we have enough here right now. Like, trade deadline is always about got to get depth defenseman. That's what we've all been trained to say around trade deadline. When you're not sure what a team needs, just say depth defenseman, because that's what everybody needs. But if you're Julien Brisebois 18 games in here, what are you seeing with your squad?
Well, I think they probably perform maybe better than you would have thought, just because you lose Kucherov 3 games in. You don't know what you're going to get out of your rookies, and they've got 4 of them now, if you count Alex Barry-Boulet, who's back. You know, you didn't know what kind of production. And look, the offense has not been there yet, but they have played very, very well. I mean, last night, you know, they're matched up against Sean Couturier's line, and they spent a lot of the night in the offensive zone, which kind of tells you where their game is at as a trio. But I think if we're looking at a whole, just as I just mentioned, they are not.
And we lost them. The enemy of technology, this program. We got a hit break anyhow. I want to thank Eric Erlandson for stopping by. We'll have him back on. Listen, Tampa's always a discussion on this program. So we'll have Erlandson back sooner than later. We will step away, come back, remind you there are 14 games on the go around the NHL this evening. Tomorrow we start to sort of assess where everybody is at. Best defenseman, Hart Trophy, Vezina, Jack Adams, etc. at the quarter mark. In the meantime, we'll preview some of these games on the horizon, some of the more hot-button issues around the NHL as well, with our producer, Matt Marchese, who stops by to conclude the show. So we'll step away. More of the Merrick Show in moments across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Back to the program. We bring on our producer, Matt Marchese. Hello, Maddie.
Hello, Jeffrey.
How are you today?
Better than Eric Erlandson's fall.
Yeah, hey, it happens, man. What are you going
to
do?
We're used to it.
We're at the whims of technology. That's okay. That happens.
Eric's phone was taken Thanksgiving Day dinner early.
Just wanted to finish up. Just like, all right, can we be done talking about hockey now? This phone, it's like the phone just said, I'm sick of hearing hockey sounds going into this thing. Can you talk about something else or just hang me up? The phone had just had enough of hockey talk.
That's it.
What's up, bud? What do you got on your mind?
So this is going to sound like a really stupid question, Jeff. I'm going to preface this by saying that I'm aware that it sounds stupid. However, so we see Connor McDavid's scoring streak snapped at 17 games. And I ask you this question.
Okay.
Is Leon Draisaitl the most underrated player in the NHL? Because we should be celebrating the fact that he has 36 points through 18 games and is scoring at an absolutely incredible pace and doesn't get the same shine that he probably should.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked about this on the show the other day. I'm in full agreement with that. Like, there's again, it's tough because when you look at the Edmonton Oilers, we all know that Connor McDavid is the tip of the spear. But right now, if you look at the numbers, the boxcar numbers, he's leading in goals, he's leading in points. He's amazing. He wins a ton of draws. He's like, I don't know how many more things we can say about Leon Draisaitl. Other than, you know, when you force Draisaitl and McDavid together, you know you're doing a really good job as an opposition, because that is the break glass in case of emergency move for Dave Tippett. Uh-oh, need something. Okay, put them back together. That's like when Chicago, Quenneville used to do this, when they would always keep Taves and Kane separated, but when they needed to create something right away, I was like, okay, let's just get these two guys together so we can manufacture a goal here. Long-winded way of saying, you know, without giving it a whole ton of thought, considering how much of a superstar Draisaitl is, and considering he is, you know, a top 5 player in the world right now, yeah, he is underrated, I suppose. As underrated as you can be when you're leading the NHL in almost all the offensive categories.
I would agree with that. Okay, I know we've talked about this on the show. Everybody is aware that Jeff is a gear geek. We are very accustomed to hearing stories about that. But in this case, we're going to talk about Olympic sweaters. And the Canadian and U.S. Olympic teams both released their sweaters. The Canadian Olympic team last night, the U.S. Olympic team this morning. I don't know, Jeff. I kind of feel like they missed the mark a little bit, both of them.
I don't mind the U.S.'s. at all. I mean, so here's where I'm at where it comes to things like fashion in sports. And for the purposes of the show, fashion in hockey. I kind of look at it the way I look at the All-Star game. Not everything has to appeal to my tastes at all. So I qualify anything that I say about either the All-Star game or jersey fashion, whether it's the one that we just saw from the Devils or the outfits that we saw come out from Team Canada last night. I'm not a... Let me slice it this way. I don't mind it as a jersey, just not for Team Canada. Like, I tend to always slant on the side that, you know, tradition is just peer pressure from dead people. Don't get married to old things. Try to look forward. You know, having said that, you know, I spent a lot of my time reading about hockey history. But I kind of like a more traditional look and feel for teams when it comes to things like the Olympics, more so than even the World Cup of Hockey. Ailish was talking about this on the Fan Morning Show in Toronto this morning. I like it a little more traditional that way. But having said that, I don't mind it as a logo. I don't mind it as a color combination. I know there's always been a race to black, and that goes all the way back to when Gretzky went from Edmonton to LA, and LA changed those glorious purple and golds. But I like it if it were any other team other than a national team. How about that way? Not a big fan of it as a national team. But if it was like, you know, team number 33 in the NHL, and that was the combination they came out with, and that was a look they came out with, yeah, sure, I'm fine with it. Just maybe not for an Olympic team. How about that? How about that for pleasing nobody? How about that for sitting on the fence and not pleasing anybody?
Well, just be sure to pick the splinters out of your butt once you're done.
Yeah, it's true.
Goaltending tandems. So I could preface this all by saying you could have Andrei Vasilevskiy or any of these tandems, but that wouldn't be fair because I know you're going to take Andrei Vasilevskiy. So I'm going to give you some goaltending tandems, and you pick which one you like the most for this season. Sergei Bobrovsky and Spencer Knight. Elvis Merzlikins and Jonas Korpisalo.
Yep.
Marc-Andre Fleury and Kevin Lankinen. Vitek Vanacek and Ilya Samsonov, or Ilya Sorokin and Semyon Varlamov. We asked the hard-hitting questions.
I know that Islanders are having a tough time. Like a really tough time. In the beginning of the season, I would have said Sorokin and Varlamov, and I'm still probably leaning that way with my choice of tandems. Okay, I would probably lean the Islanders' way. Now, I know that, the Islanders aren't doing great, but Ilya Sorokin's still having a really nice season, and there's a better goaltender in Varlamov than we've seen so far this year after only four games. I like Elvis Merzlikins a lot.
Yes.
I don't know that Jonas Korpisalo is going to be a Blue Jacket by the end of the season. Listen, I don't know that Marc-Andre Fleury is going to be a Blackhawk by trade deadline. I do like Merzlikins. Not a huge fan of Korpisalo. I can see him maybe on the move. Maybe that's a destination for, you know, maybe he ends up with the Buffalo Sabres, for example. Maybe he ends up with the Edmonton Oilers. Who knows? Marc-Andre Fleury at times, like the Marc-Andre Fleury against Vancouver on the weekend, like, yeah, I'll take that guy all day. The Marc-Andre Fleury against Winnipeg Jets a couple of weeks ago on that Friday night before Colton got fired, yeah, I don't want that guy.
Yeah.
And who else did you have? You had the Washington combination?
Yeah, I would choose, to be
why,
honest.
Okay, so why would you choose them? Why would you choose them over the Islanders pair?
Firstly, I like the unit that they have in front of them as good as anybody except for maybe Florida. But I really like the way Washington's playing right now. And Samsonov started, you know, slow by his standards, but he's been excellent his last few starts. I believe he has 3 shutouts in 7 starts this year. I know that's not sustainable, but Vanacek, you know, when he came up last season, we didn't really know what to expect. He was really good, and he actually, for the better part of this season, was the better goalie, you know, than Samsonov was. But I like that tandem. I feel like one of those guys, if the other one went down, I really like either guy to really carry the load and go on a run. I think that both goalies are that good. It's just kind of weird to me that Washington had to trade to get Vanacek back. That was the thing that always got me. And paid more than you probably needed to, but it's turned out it's worked out for them because he's been really good.
That was one of the more weird expansion draft dynamics. Now, how come you didn't throw in Calgary with Markstrom and Dan Vladar?
I don't know. Because when I kind of look at...
Because they may be the best ones. They might be the best of the best of the bunch.
They might be, but I guess the way I kind of looked at it is of those tandems that I picked out, if this, you know, the 1A goes down, is the 1B, you know, going to be able to have a lengthy run? And that's why I kind of looked at those tandems, because they've all done it in the past. Every one of guys, except Vanacek, but Vanacek last season was pretty good. But all those goalies that I mentioned have been able to carry the load when they've been the guy. And Vladar really hasn't had to do that. Last year was kind of a mixed bag with Boston. But that's how I kind of looked at it. And the interesting one was Bobrovsky and Knight, because I think we all look at Spencer Knight and say, that guy's the future, right?
Hang on, not even the future. There are a lot of people that were just handing Spencer Knight the starting job. Sergei Bobrovsky is a dud, $10 million mistake. He's got the long-term deal, doesn't expire for, another 6 years? Is 6 years they have left?
It's an eternity 5 years for a goalie.
5 or 6 years. And I know, and the guy's like 33 years old too. So like, oh man, this is going to be real bad by the end of it. But he's been fantastic.
Yes.
Right? Bobrovsky's come back this season. You know, the team is great. Oh, by the way, 1 to 2 more weeks for Alexander Barkov, speaking of Florida. We're all ready to hand Spencer Knight the starting job. And Bobrovsky, and good on him, you know, comes in and says, not so fast here. I'm not going to surrender this one. You know, it's not like I could only... I know there's a sort of an Ian Clark vibe for any of those goaltenders from Columbus. Like, oh, you can only excel when you have Clark as your goalie instructor. I know it was a challenging couple of seasons to start for Bobrovsky, but man, that guy looks good.
Yeah,
right, 4 more years on his deal. For the Florida Panthers. Is it 4? Okay, it's not that bad then.
It's still...
Okay, well, that's fine.
It's still not all that great, because he's got to play like this the rest of the way in order to justify the deal.
Yeah, it's fine, though. It's he looks good. And yeah, Spencer Knight's goalie of the future. It's only money. Just pull some off the tree in the backyard. Thanks to Eric Erlandson for stopping by and talking to us about Tampa. Billy Jaffe did the same, but about the Boston Bruins. Peter Baugh from The Athletic got us caught up on the Colorado Avalanche and a tour around the hot-button news stories involving Vancouver. That saga continues tonight as they face off against the Pens. Thank Elliot Friedman for stopping by the show. Back with more Merrick Show tomorrow, noon Eastern at 9 Pacific. Thanks for joining me today.